Hey guys, welcome to the Flight Talk podcast. I have Dimitri on. Dimitri is currently in the Air Force working on just finished his commercial rating. Dimitri, welcome to the podcast. Give us a quick introduction about how you got in aviation and where you're at now.
Hey, thanks for having me. So my name's Dimitri. I've been flying since about 2010. That's when I took my first flight. I got into aviation probably around the time I was in middle school. I had a friend of mine in class. He knew that I was interested in flying and at the time space, but he gave me an old copy of his flight simulator, and I started playing that every chance that I got. I would fiddle around with it all the time. Eventually got to the point where I could start doing flight training. Like you, I was in the Air Force. In my first duty station, my second day, I was able to find someone that happened to work at a flight school, and I was flying within like 48 hours of being at my new base. Just finished doing my commercial rating. Hopefully going to do my multi this winter, and after that, really all the cards are on the table.
Cool. So you got into aviation at a young age. When you were graduating high school, did you enlist straight out of high school? What'd you do?
I actually didn't. I took a couple years and went to college for a little bit. Got some classes done, kind of wanted to take a break from it, but didn't really know what to do. I was living in Florida at the time, so there are a lot of flight schools down there. A lot of the zero to hero, get it done, become a CFI and keep it moving kind of flight schools that put you in a lot of debt. And essentially couldn't really convince my parents to take that load of debt, and instead decided to join the military and figure things out on my own. So I almost went Army, actually. It was one of the first recruiters I spoke to. And once they found out I like flying, they're like, oh, well, you should be a warrant officer and fly helicopters. And me being a young kid, I was just like, well, I don't like helicopters, so no. And instead, I went over to the Air Force recruiter, spoke with them for a little bit. We went over a few different jobs, wound up getting assigned intel and shipped off for basic training in the summer of 2013. After that, I did about 7 months at intel school before I went to my first duty station in Hawaii, and that's where I started doing actual flight training.
Nice. So you probably made the best decision of your life walking out of that Army recruiter's office and heading over to the Air Force.
Yeah, I haven't regretted it so far. So,
yeah, neither do I. So you started doing your training as an enlisted guy at your first base at Hawaii, correct?
That's correct. So, go ahead.
So how for you, how did you manage, you know, your work-life balance and your flying?
So doing the flight training like that was actually a little bit tricky in the beginning. So when I was in Hawaii, there were, believe it or not, a couple flight schools in the Honolulu area. And it wasn't the easiest thing to do. I'm sure, as you know, when you're an A1C and brand new to the Air Force, you're not exactly making a lot of money. And
oh, yeah,
so
$100 paycheck is nice.
Exactly. And about half of that would go to one flight lesson. So it was real tricky because at the end of my flights, my instructors would be like, so when do you want to fly again? And I would say, well, what are you doing next month? And it went like that for a little while. And I really sat down and thought about it. I was like, there's got to be an easier way to do this. And I started asking around other people on base. I started talking to some of the pilots from the other units. And the consensus was you got to find some way to kind of build your training faster or you're never going to progress. And so I tried a couple options. I initially had talked to the Civil Air Patrol unit that was on Oahu. That didn't really work out. And what I wound up doing is actually sitting down with the owner of the flight school in Hawaii. And I said, hey, listen, what can I do for you here at the flight school? So I'm essentially working for you and then accelerating my flight training. And what we agreed upon was basically on my off days and in the evenings, I would just go down there and wash the airplanes. I'd clean the airplanes out, clean out the flight school. And I just said, instead of paying me money, put it in my flight account. And that really made things kind of start going in the right direction. I could start flying more frequently. I could actually really start to understand those initial lessons that you get just before you're solo without having to knock the rust off for the first half of each flight. So things really progressed there. There was a bit of a shift because the flight school that I was at, there were a couple of things there that I wasn't exactly comfortable with when it came to airplane maintenance and upkeep and things like that. So I eventually stopped flying there and was kind of just sitting there hanging for a little while. But I was lucky enough that somebody that used to work at that flight school worked at a charter company just upstairs in the same building and recommended me by name and said, hey, this guy's working on his ratings and he's basically working as a line tech for this flight school downstairs. Let's see if we can bring him on. So I switched over to them and became essentially a line tech for their charter company. Now they had a couple of 172s, one that they used as a trainer, one was a tour airplane. Then they also had two twins that they used for charter operations, a Piper Chieftain and a Cessna 421 Golden Eagle. And that job was really unique and really kind of kickstarted my progression in my flight training. I flew the 172 as often as I could, as often as time would allow. Got most of my private pilot done out in Hawaii. So I did my first solo, my solo cross countries. Everything was done out there. And then in my spare time that I still had, I was able to go out and kind of sit right seat on some of these charter runs that we did, going from island to island. And then on the Part 91, the empty leg, I actually got to fly it. So it's kind of weird to be a student pilot helping fly these charter flights and then getting to fly a twin engine airplane while you're still trying to master a 172, but it was unique.
Yeah, no, that definitely is a life that most A1Cs don't live.
Yeah, no kidding, though.
But but that's sometimes the way you got to get it done. I've heard like a few stories of people washing planes for money. It's rare, but like that shows initiative right there. And I mean, your drive, it paid off, you know, showing, working hard and just keep going at it paid off for you. And to have those opportunities, I mean, not many people get the chance to, you know, fly right seat, you know, for a charter operation while you're still a student pilot.
Yeah.
That's a dream.
Yeah, it definitely was. It was a really big learning experience. And honestly, I chop it up just talking to people, just being nice, being humble, not expecting anything to come towards you, but just saying like, hey, what can I do for you? I've said it before. I tend to be a person where if I see somebody doing something that I want to do, I'll walk up to them and say, hey, what did you do to get to this point? Or how can I do something similar to what you're doing? And that's really what kicked it off is I started talking to people. And for me talking to people, other people start to realize that I'm a curious person and I get shown these different opportunities. And I think anybody can do that. It's just be humble, be respectful, and show that you have the drive and initiative and put the work in. Put the work in up front and you'll definitely be rewarded on the back end.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, eventually, you know, it pays off to be a good dude, you know. And in aviation, you meet so many awesome people. And eventually just being a good person will pay off, you know, and going into it with a selfless attitude, you know, that you're not in it for yourself. You're in it to, you know, just learn as much as you can, help others. The right people will eventually, you know, align down your path. But I'm really curious. So how did you, during your private, you know, when your private pilot license, how did you manage, you know, work and flying? How was that working two jobs? Did you ever get burnt out? Did you ever feel like you were doing too much?
Most definitely. I've been perpetually burnt out going through that. Working the jobs, So that was the thing. I mean, I'm stationed in Hawaii. I should be going to the beach. I should be going on these hikes and stuff like that. And here I am just going just outside of the base and going to Honolulu Airport and cleaning airplanes. But it's what I wanted to do. I'm not a huge social person in the first place, so I didn't need to go to the beach all the time. So I wanted to do something that I actually like to do. So it, for me, it was just, it was something that I wanted to do, and I like doing it. I like being around the airplanes. I like learning about what was going on, and it led to a lot of great experiences that I never would have had if I just didn't put the time in. Working a second job, especially while being like active duty or anything like that, it's challenging. If it's necessary, there are ways to do it. Speaking with your commander, getting the proper paperwork to do that kind of stuff. Even if it's just a weekend gig, like it takes dedication and it really just requires you to kind of focus on what it is you want to do long term instead of thinking about like the short term fun that you could be missing.
Most definitely. What'd your supervisor think about it? This brand new A1C.
My supervisor, well, most of the people in my unit thought that it was actually kind of funny. It was strange because, I mean, when I was at work, I never really shut up about airplanes. And then they started finding out like, oh, you actually fly airplanes. You're not just talking about them. So it just kind of became like the running joke where anything aviation related is like, oh, just go ask Dimitri. Like he knows all about airplanes. He flies them. So, which has led to funny conversations and interactions with various people throughout my career. But my supervisor was always on board. My commander was always on board. I was always upfront with that kind of stuff. So,
yeah. So when did you finish your private?
So I finished my private after I left Hawaii and moved to Wright-Patterson. So I was close to finishing my private in Hawaii, and I was really gunning for it. But my flight instructor at the time, she was from Japan, and she was on a worker's visa with the charter company. Her visa expired about 6 months before I PCS, so we couldn't finish my training, and I couldn't get my check ride done, which was a big bummer. I did do a couple more flights with some people before I left, made tons of great friends in Hawaii. But then got my orders to Wright-Patterson, which is just outside of Dayton, Ohio. Once I got here, I started looking at flight schools in the area, eventually found one that was tied to a collegiate program, which, as you know, going in that direction, that means you can start using VA, which I was like, oh, this is fantastic. Like, because I, at that point, I was like, I'm so close, but I don't have the same kind of job and connections that I had in Hawaii. I don't know how the hell I'm going to do this in Ohio. So I was really fortunate to find the college program so close to where I live, so close to the base, to where I could start doing more courses, more of my flight training, and at a very consistent basis to get all my ratings done.
What school did you go through?
So I'm at Sinclair College in Dayton, Ohio.
Okay. It's funny. I've actually heard of that school because about a year and a half ago, my girlfriend was applying for CRNA school out in Ohio.
Okay.
And I actually looked that up. I saw Ohio one out in Columbus, but that was kind of a drive. But yeah, I'm kind of glad we're not moving up there now because the cold. We're actually going down to Tampa next year, and I'm just going to flight instruct down there.
Oh, there you go.
So you did your private, and then did you roll right into your instrument? Did you take a break, have some fun flying? What'd you do?
Once I finished private with that school, I was on a roll. So I rolled right into instrument, and that's when things started to get a little bit interesting. So instrument's obviously a challenging rating, but about, I'd say, a halfway to three quarters along the way, all of a sudden COVID reared its ugly head. And for a brief period of time, the school wouldn't allow us to fly. And so everybody was not flying. People were getting rusty. The flying eventually came back. And this is kind of where I started having a bit of like a go, 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 let's get it done attitude. And a lot of things happened at once. So a week before my check ride, my dad had unfortunately passed away. And I went up to Michigan and I was traveling back and forth and handling stuff and take care of the funeral and everything. But in the back of my mind, I was like, hey, in like 3 days, I got to go do this check ride. Let's go. Like, I can't forget that. So the day of my check ride comes, and halfway through one of my maneuvers, I completely lost focus and started flying way too fast on a circle to land maneuver without correcting or making any kind of fix to it. The DPE noticed it and noticed I didn't make any corrections, and I actually failed my instrument check ride the first time. And I sat down and looked at it, and I said, you know what? I was pushing way too hard. I was trying to get everything done. I've had so much stuff happen, and I couldn't focus, and I messed up. But I owned up. I live with it. And a few days later, went and retrained with my CFI, and then went back up and got my instrument check ride finally done. And that was really kind of a turning point for me, because one, the instrument rating is an important one. That's what makes you a safer pilot. And when you're an instrument flying, you obviously don't want to get behind the airplane, because once you start, it's very hard to catch back up with everything going on. So after instrument, I decided to come with a new approach for when I was doing commercial. I wanted to kind of like pull it back, really focus on what the end goal was, which was to be a commercial pilot. And so I really focused hard and kind of reinvigorated myself for the commercial flight training. Rolled right into commercial that next semester and flew my butt off in the fall. Every few nights I was up, I did a lot of my cross country flying at night, and which it really was the best time to do it. But I tried to go to as many unique places as I could. I went to a couple places that I thought were challenging, but still within my personal minimums. And I really just focused on like making the most out of those cross countries, because that time building, it can really get old real fast. It's just like you have so many hours to build, and it's just like, okay, let's just go here and go back and get it out of the way. But I really wanted it to mean something. So I really started like picking unique places that I thought I may come across again in my future as a commercial pilot, and really started trying to do more challenging approaches into busier airspace just to make sure that I can handle that kind of flying.
Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, that's really tough. But that goes to show, you know, that stress of when you're stressed and flying, those two don't equal out. And taking that break, and especially with like mental health in aviation, it's such an overlooked entity, and people, you know, really need to take it seriously. And sometimes you need to take a knee. Even, you know, the military, they say it all the time, hey, we need to take a knee, take a knee. And I think that's really important. And with instrument flying, I mean, it is all mental. It's not, I mean, you're flying the plane, but it, like you said, you constantly have to be thinking ahead of the plane. And it was definitely a tough rating to get, but it was rewarding. And to, you know, that lesson you learned, like, it will probably stick with you for the rest of your life. Of like, sometimes you just have to give yourself a break, because you just, once you overwork yourself, there's no going back. But I agree with you too, with the commercial training. I've found time building can't get boring when you're sitting on a little 172 going 100 knots.
Yeah.
But finding, you know, those cool places to go to, I've tried to like find different airport restaurants every weekend when I go do a cross country, and just, you know, bring a friend or bring my girlfriend and just go up and have some fun, you know?
Oh, definitely.
And it does get boring, but sometimes you have to remember, like, no, this is pretty cool what I'm doing. Like the other day, I was going down to an airport just up Maryland, and I look out to my left and I'm like, what airport is that? And I look down at my iPad and I'm like, no way. And I'm like, wait, I see work. And I see Andrews right off to my left, and we're like right along the freeze of DC. And I was like, you know, this is actually pretty cool. And sometimes you have to remind yourself, like, what you're doing is cool. And you just got to remind yourself, like, not many people get to do this. But
oh, yeah. I've had many moments that were just like that. Like you, my destinations kind of were stomach driven. I've flown to a couple places with really good food. Eagle Creek out in Indiana is one. Urbana here in Ohio has very good pie. There's plenty of places that just have really good food, and it makes the flight that much more interesting. But yeah, sometimes you do forget that like what you're doing is something that like others don't do. I try not to be vain about my flying. I'm not one to be like, oh, look at me, I'm a pilot, but I do like to kind of share what I do. That's kind of what I do on my Instagram pages. I really just made my Instagram page as kind of like a personal diary of like everything that I've been doing, because after a while I was like, you know, this is a really unique story. Like I think it's fun, like the process that I'm going through with training, because it's not the typical you go to the flight school and you just hammer out your ratings and then on to the next thing. I was like, you know what, this is really like it's fun, it's unique. And it's something that I wouldn't believe that I've been through unless I saw it for myself. And so that's what I like to document along the way, because it really is, everybody's flying story is always unique. And all it takes is just talking to them and learning about it.
No, I agree. And the whole Instagram page, I agree with you. Like when I made mine, I was doing my private training and I kind of was like, oh, maybe I shouldn't do this. You know, let me get my private first. And then I was like, you know what? No, like this is from the, like I can document this from the beginning to the end of my flying career one day. And another thing is not many enlisted guys do the route that you and I have taken. I have a few other friends that have started it, but it's rare for an enlisted guy to be working on his ratings or her ratings while active duty. So
That's
that's
absolutely
another
true.
thing to inspire other people, because there's a lot of smart enlisted people and very capable people. And all it takes is for them maybe one day Instagram reel that pops up and they're like, wait, is that guy enlisted? What? How is he flying? And a quick DM could turn into them, you know, walking over to a flight school and signing up for their first flight, and the rest is history.
That is absolutely true. And the big thing about that is any person, whether you're in the military or just a kid wanting to fly, just do your research, because you may have to like really dig for those opportunities to really show their face. I mean, like I started just trying to pay for one flight at a time, and I was just like, I can't do this. Like I looked around, I did research, and it's just like, well, maybe I should work at the airport. And I mean, for enlisted people, flying's not just for the officers, all right? The O's, sure, they get paid to do it, and their flight training's free. But you know what? If you find the right kind of program in your local area near your base, guess what? You're getting the same kind of thing. So it's the flying's not just for the O's. Anybody can do it.
No, I agree. And well, at the end of the day, who gets the better deal? We do 4 years and get a GI Bill. They have to do
Yeah,
10. So
exactly.
at the end of the day, who's really winning? I mean, you may make, yeah, you're definitely making more money while you're in, but you know, one day you, I mean, it is very realistic that somebody could enlist at 4 years, be done with their degree, get their up to at least their commercial done. And, you know, they join when they're 18 and what, they're 21 when they get out. And their buddy is just graduating college and going to pilot training. And that kid's already 21, you know, wrapping up his college degree and working on his airline
Exactly.
in 2 more years. So it's, and everybody has their own path. And sometimes it is difficult to not envy other people, especially in the military. I mean, I envy those pilots. But you have to remember there's a specific path for you, and you just got to like, really enjoy the journey, the process, not constantly be looking to the next best thing and just soak it all up, because one day you're going to look back and say, man, I really, you know, you might be flying a, you know, a 777 and you're like, oh, I wish I could get back into a 172, you know, with my buddies from flight school. So you just got to
Exactly.
soak it all up. But so you did your instrument training and, you know, you had that hurdle. How was your commercial training? Were there any difficulties with maneuvers or anything in that nature?
A little bit near the end. Commercial training, I absolutely loved the first half, because it was essentially just take the airplane and go. So I was really just doing all the cross countries, which I love doing. Unlike some of my aviation family here, I tend to like just flying in a straight line and going from place to place. I've recently met a few people who like to do the exact opposite, which is kind of just stay around the local patch and have a little bit more fun with airplanes. And they've been kind of corrupting me at this point. But I was really into just doing cross-country flights and going from place to place. Once I got past the cross-country and time-building phase, getting into the maneuvers, I was initially starting to question my own abilities because up to that point, that was something that was absolutely brand new to me. Before I started flight training, I had been reading books and watching movies and all that kind of stuff. So I had a general idea of how, like, just basically flying an airplane worked. But the one thing I always avoided really looking into were the commercial maneuvers. It's just like, oh, I'll get to that later. And then when I finally got to them, I was just like, this is really one of the first times that I don't know what I'm doing. So I really tried to pay extra attention learning the commercial maneuvers because it was the first time I was kind of deer in the headlights with it. There were a couple snags in training, as just with any other flight school. CFIs come and go, and you've been flying with one for a while, and then they go off and advance their career, and now you're flying with someone new. It takes a little bit of getting used to trying to learn from someone else, but I got through those snags and essentially started figuring out my own rhythm for how to do the maneuvers. And then by the end of stage three, when I was out soloing, I was completely comfortable doing any of the maneuvers.
Yeah, I know the maneuvers are definitely challenging. What has helped me a lot really is chair flying. Like today, I got up, I chair flied, and then I went and flew in the afternoon. And like really getting those procedures down to the back of your hand helps, because then it's just all natural and you can worry about actually flying the plane. And what was the toughest maneuver or maneuvers you struggled with the most?
I would say that my lazy eights were not so lazy. I tend to go a little bit outside of ACS, sometimes banking too far or gaining too much speed in the dive. Those required a little bit of touching up. And then that was probably the one that was really snagging me the most at the end. My eights on pylons, which were my favorite maneuver, I didn't realize the first half of learning them, I was doing them wrong. I was essentially doing two turns around the point instead of actually like really adjusting the pitch for the eights. I was kind of more just adjusting the bank to try and stay on my target. So, but I had a great CFI that caught that error and fixed it. And once I figured out the real way to do it, it was full steam ahead.
Yeah, no, the saying, what is it? Pitch, if it's moving forward, pitch forward, moving back, pitch back.
Yep.
Yeah. But I would say that the lazy eights are the hardest maneuver for, because it's, you kind of have to let the airplane fly itself, but you're still adding some very minimal inputs.
Yeah.
And it's just such a light touch. And sometimes you overpower it. Sometimes you're not using enough, you know, forward pressure. And it's a maneuver that you just kind of have to learn the feel. Really, like, trust, you know, yourself letting the plane do its own thing. Did your flight school have a lot of, like, every maneuver had specific procedures to it, or did every CFI kind of teach it differently?
I wouldn't say necessarily that every maneuver had its procedure. It's more like every flight has its procedures that go with it. The school, it's a 141 school, and they've been working on creating, like, standards for, like, entering and exiting maneuvers. They've been building like designated practice areas out in the farmlands in Ohio. And so there was that side of it, but it was more of just kind of like, once you got into the practice area and were established and the area was clear, you do your clearing turns. And I mean, we have like our checklist of things that we want to do, or like our syllabus for each flight. And essentially it was just go through each one. And then if there was any errors, we would talk about it or correct it as we went along. But that, it was pretty straightforward.
Yeah. The flight school that I'm with, they literally follow a strict set of maneuvers or procedures for every single maneuver. So mm-hmm. It really helps when you fly with another instructor. Everything is so streamlined.
Right.
So you know what you should expect. They know what you should, you should be regurgitating to them. And it just makes it simple. So flying with another CFI, yeah, they may do things a little differently, but everything is pretty much the same. And I really like that about our flight school. It's very uniform. Everything is very strict regarding procedures. And that my first flight school, I actually went to two different flight schools at the beginning during my private. The first one didn't work out. Then I went to a flight school called Freeway Aviation, where I completed my private. But it was Part 61, so, you know, every instructor kind of taught things a little differently. But I really enjoy the 141, having that, you know, very strict curriculum to it and procedures.
Yeah, there's definitely the difference. When I was in Hawaii, I was flying mostly Part 61, and then when I came to Ohio, I switched to Part 141, but I honestly like Part 141, and I think more military people tend to like the structure of 141 compared to if you're really just flying, just to learn how to fly, like as a hobby. Part 61 tends to be the better way to do that.
No, yeah, I agree. And I mean, I had a great instructor for my private at Part 6 during that Part 61 training at that school, Freeway. I mean, he was awesome. Made everything very easy to learn. But what I really enjoyed is having a course curriculum and being able to look at it and say, all right, I have this lesson. And then at the end of the lesson, looking at my instructor and him giving me a, hey, you know, it's a go, or hey, we're going to go back and work on that. And it just helps you, it just helps you stay on track, not feel almost lost. Like, oh, are we doing this again? Or are we going to go do this lesson again? Like, but yeah, I definitely agree. The 141 track is, I would say, more efficient, especially for military people who are used to that strong, you know, course curriculum. So with your career in the military, did you ever consider going and trying to submit an OTS package, trying to fly in the reserves or active duty?
So that's been kind of the debate now. So I recently switched over to the reserves to kind of open that up a little bit more, those opportunities. Right now I'm working for a cargo airline as a data analyst in their safety department, and I do my reserve still as a intel specialist. But the question has always popped up, and they're always asking us, like, hey, do you want to put together a package when your degree's done? And right now I don't know. I honestly am not sure. I'm not entirely sure what I want to do with it. I kind of am just enjoying the path that I'm on right now. I'm at a point now where I've got a great job and I've got a great path in aviation that I don't necessarily know if I need to go back into the military to fly, because I'm doing so much flying that I'm enjoying on the outside.
Yeah, no, I agree. Yeah, I feel very similar. It's almost like, is the commitment worth it? That, you know, because it's 2 years of your life gone, essentially. I mean, that first year of pilot training is, I hear it's not a very fun year, and then your second year is going to your base and, you know, working with the unit for a while to build some time. And it almost puts a dent in your civilian career. And your civilian career is really what matters if you're not, you know, career active duty. And you can make a lot more money on the outside. Not that money's everything, but the civilian sector pays a lot more than the military does.
Oh, it most definitely does. And I mean, there are some that have the best of both worlds. You got the whole Guard Reserve Mafia out there, and they're flying the airlines, and then they come in when they come in to do their military flying stuff. And I mean, there are some great, great people there that do both and are super happy doing that. I don't know if I necessarily could do the exact same kind of thing. Military flying comes with so much more than just flying the airplane and kind of enjoying your career. There's all the side stuff that comes with a career in the military. You have to worry about progression. You have to worry about supervising. And that was one of the things that initially kind of turned me away from wanting to be a military flyer in the first place. I kind of simple-minded, where I just wanted to fly airplanes. I didn't necessarily want to have to fly for a few years, and like, okay, now we need to start talking about getting your oak leaf, and then you're going to get your bird, and then you're going to go lead a squadron. I'm like, well, I don't want to do that. I want to continue to fly my plane.
Yeah, no, I agree. It's funny that you say that. I have a buddy that I've met over here at Andrews who he's a lieutenant, and he's a helicopter pilot. And I saw him at the gym the other day, and I'm like, "Hey, man, what have you been up to? You've been flying?" He's like, "I haven't flown since I got here." I'm like, "What are you talking about, dude?" And he's like, "Our physical budget for this year is like, running short, so they don't even have any hours for me. So I'm just doing admin work." And I'm like, "Dang."
Ugh.
And he was like, "Yeah, dude, I joined the Air Force to be a pilot, but I've just been doing paperwork." And I was like, "Yeah, that sucks."
Yeah.
So yeah, and my dad's been in the Air Force for going on 22 years now. He's about to separate, but you are a pilot, but you're also an officer at the end of the day, and there's a lot of other busy work that comes with it that has nothing to do with flying. So
Yeah, no, that's definitely true. So
I agree with you. And so do you have a goal in sight? Do you want to go cargo or do you want to go airlines? Is there something specific that you want to achieve?
well, it's mostly up in the air right now. I've always had the aspiration to fly for the airlines, and I'm still moving in that direction. But I've been a little bit sidetracked with what exactly I want to explore in aviation, thanks to my girlfriend, who is also a pilot and has recently pulled me into a facet of aviation that I never thought I'd get the chance to experience, which is the vintage side. I've gotten a little bit distracted. I've been paying a little bit more attention to general aviation and vintage flying, and I even got a taste of aerobatics recently. That
Yeah, that's awesome.
I've really been trying to kind of see if I can get my feet wet in aerobatics, maybe do a little upset recovery training. But the main goal is still to fly for the airlines, however I get there.
Yeah, I know that acrobatic training. There's an upset recovery training course at the airport that I fly out of, and it's pretty expensive. And maybe one day I'll go out and test it, but right now, no, but it looks awesome. We have a there's an airport just east or west of our airport, Warrington Airport, that has an acrobatic box, and today we're actually doing power off 180s there. And
Okay.
there was this, I think it might have been like an RV7 or something, just going nuts. This guy was definitely having some fun just doing loops and like rolls, and I don't really know most of the terminology for the aerobatics, but yeah, that stuff looks pretty cool.
Oh, it's definitely fun. I got to go up in a Citabria back around July period, and went through a good handful of the maneuvers. And I mean, once you get your first dose of vitamin G, like you can't just get rid of that. So, I mean, once I got back on the ground, like just like when I originally wanted to be a pilot, I was researching everything. Where do you do aerobatics? What kind of stuff do you do? Turns out there's a whole chapter of the EAA that's responsible for it. So the IAC, the International Aerobatics Club. And so I looked up like, where can I do aerobatics training? Oh, there's competitions. How do I compete? And so that's been a very healthy distraction lately is looking and seeing the different avenues of aerobatic
Are you going to start washing planes again to pay for
flying. We'll see.
So with your training moving forward, you said you're going to do your multi. Are you going to start that soon? When what time frames look like for you?
I'm probably gonna start doing that closer to the end of the year. Yeah, I'd say probably November, December time frame I want to get it done. I'm taking a little bit of a break now. Now that I finished my commercial, that was already a huge goal that I wanted to achieve this year, and I did it. So I'm kind of relaxing at this point. I've been on a training schedule for the past few years, and I mean, fitting the training schedule into my already busy work and family schedule, it's kind of nice to have gaps in my schedule again to breathe and pursue other things and kind of take care of more personal items in my life. But I think I'll be ready to pick it up again this winter and knock out my multi.
Okay, nice. Yeah. No, yeah, that I mean, sometimes you got to have that break. I remember after my private I had about a 2 month break, and I was just like, wow, I have so much free time. It was nice, you know, going to the gym consistently, you know, every day after work, not worrying about studying or doing any homework. And yeah, it's nice, but it's when you're in that training mindset, it's like you were saying, a go, go, go mentality, because you just want to naturally, you want to, you know, complete that next task. You want to move forward.
Yeah.
And finding that healthy balance is important. What's your commute to your airport? Do you have a long commute? Like, is it close to your house?
It's a relatively short commute. I'm only about 20 minutes from the airport. So it's always been a short commute. I purposely will move to places that allow me to have a short commute. So
yeah, I envy you, because the DC area does not have any GA airports near it. So I got to my airport. It never gets shorter.
Ooh, yikes. Yeah, I totally get that.
Yeah, it's worth it. The drive there is tough. The drive back is even tougher because you're just exhausted. But, you know, anything to get up in the sky, I'm fine with.
Oh, definitely.
So after your multi, is there a specific carrier company you're trying to fly with? Do you have anything in mind?
You know, if you would have asked me a few months ago if I had specifics in mind, I probably would have told you. But now it's been a shift in focus. I mean, the carriers as they exist now aren't the same 6 months from now, a year from now, 2 years from now. And places that I've set my sights on, I've seen them change over the years. And that doesn't necessarily disqualify them, but I keep my focus open. I'm always looking for different options. As I get closer and closer to making that decision, that's when I kind of look through the soda straw again. But I've always been a strategist and a long-term planner, so I need the big map board in front of me, not necessarily just looking through a single lens.
Yeah, no, I feel you. With your university, do you get a restricted ATP out of that?
They do have the restricted ATP program that they recently got approved, but I am not a part of it. What's 250 more hours? I don't mind waiting till 1500.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I mean, whatever floats your boat, I definitely am going to, because like, I don't think I would like to instruct for 1500 hours when I have the option for 1000, but do you have your eyes set on instructing at all, or are you going to try to do something different?
I do plan to get my instructor rating, but my focus has been more on maybe going part 135 or finding some other opportunities to kind of fly something different than just basic maneuvers and in and out of the pattern.
No, yeah, I agree. Like, I know Ameriflight, they're a pretty big carrier that hires pretty low time pilots. I think they're 500 hours.
Yeah, Ameriflight is a good company.
And they have, I believe it's all multi-engine operations as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, no, I mean, that wouldn't be a bad gig. But yeah, no, right now, even with COVID, how it's still kind of lingering and not, you know, it still has its effect on the aviation industry. And hopefully, you know, soon we can get tabs on this and we can go back to our normal life of aviation being a very dominant career field.
But, oh, I agree. But I mean, aviation in its nature has always been a cyclical career. I mean, the same thing happened while we were growing up after 9/11, then the market crash in 2008 or 2010. Then you had Ebola, that kind of was a smaller version of what's happening now with COVID. There's always something, and it seems to be almost every decade that kind of grinds things to a halt. And the biggest thing is just being in the right position for when it happens. So if you're going through training and you have a goal to get to a carrier, get to that carrier as fast as you can, because that day you get in there, your seniority number starts, and your seniority number being differed by just one could have you on the opposite side of the chopping block when the next thing slows down the aviation industry.
No, I agree. Yeah. That's why my dad, he always tells me that, of get there as quick as you can. 'Cause it's, one, you know, the money is, the quicker you get there, the more money you do make. But mm-hmm. the seniority is, that's the biggest thing. And I definitely would want to be, you know, on the side that doesn't get that phone call, you know, letting you know you're furloughed. But I mean, with the aviation industry, it is cyclical. That's bound to happen. And the good thing about, you know, having a career in aviation is you can do other things. You're not, you know, tied down to your 9 to 5 Monday through Friday. So
yeah,
doing a side business is something that's very valuable. Are you, is there anything that, you know, you do on the side outside of flying, that you would continue during your aviation career as like a side career?
You know, that's a good question. Not at the moment, I would say, but I'm always privy for looking for opportunities like that in the future. I'm mostly focused on getting myself established in an aviation career at this point. The airline that I currently work for in their safety department, I've been working in aviation safety now for almost a couple years, once with a previous airline and on almost a year with the company that I'm with now. And I really do like that side of things. So if anything, whatever airline I do get established with, I might look internally to see if they have any kind of position available, as most of them do, in their flight safety department, whether it's quality assurance, SMS, something along those lines.
Okay. Yeah, no, I mean, and that's a very important role in a company. Are you, how was that process when you got out of the military? When did you get out?
I left active duty in November of last year. Okay. And there was actually a brief period of time where bad timing mostly, but like with COVID, even like the places that I was at were furloughing people and letting people go. So there was a brief period of time where I kind of was just on a bit of a vacation, really, where I was just kind of lounging around at home. Everything was fine financially and stuff, and I wasn't exactly in a big rush to find work. And I kind of just took a little bit of a break, and it was actually kind of a nice break. And then going back into it, one of the things I saw that was the hardest to do was to find a job in aviation in the midst of COVID like that. It was really, really hard. I applied for position after position, finally snagged the one that I got, and I'm absolutely happy with where I'm at right now. But that can be a real challenge. And that's one of those reasons why, if you are going to do a career in aviation, get in when you can, because something could easily happen that makes it very hard to get in at certain times.
Oh yeah, I agree. So with going on, you know, from here on out, with your, you said you want to go down, you know, the CFI route, possibly, say you get on with a small 135 carrier and you have the opportunity to build your hours all the way up to, you know, applying for a regional, would you stay and would you just kind of put the CFI off to the side, or would you eventually go do that?
I would probably push CFI to the side and probably continue on to a 121 carrier, but I would not fully hang up the idea of becoming an instructor. I never really wanted to be like a career instructor, but I would at least like to get my CFI to be able to kind of casually teach friends, family members, people close to me how to fly and sign them off.
Yeah. Do you ever think you would own an airplane one day?
Do I think I would own an airplane? You know, I used to think no, but peer pressure is a mother, and it's going to take some time to make sure I have the kind of funding for that. But I have definitely gotten very interested in airplane ownership lately.
Yeah, I mean, it's not cheap. I have a buddy who owns a plane, and it's definitely an investment.
Yeah, oh, it most definitely is.
Do you have a specific plane in mind?
I have a couple, and that's my problem, is I can never narrow it down to just one. I can't really narrow it down to one. I have a couple.
Yeah. So what did you do your training in? Was it Piper, Cessna?
mostly 172s. I have a little bit of Piper time. My first flight was in a Stearman. I've recently done a little bit more tailwheel flying in a Ronca Champ, a Kit Fox, kind of getting my feet wet. Even flew an old monocoupe last fall. So mostly 172s for primary training, but I've kind of started spreading my wings, so to speak, with some older airplanes.
I remember, you know, earlier you were talking about doing those charter flights as a student pilot. How was that? Like, how did that come about? And like when you were saying, you know, you were, you know, did you get to log that time?
So interestingly enough, I only got to log a couple of those flights because the captain happened to be a CFI. And so when I flew the lake, we just turned it into multi-engine instruction. So I have maybe an hour or two of multi way, way back in my logbook. most of those flights I couldn't log, but I mean, there's plenty of flights that any pilot's going to have that they don't necessarily log, but in your internal logbook, that's where it matters, is like those, just those fun opportunities that you do. Those flights aren't going to mean anything. For example, when I was stationed in Hawaii, I told you a lot of the military people found out I was flying and stuff. Well, that led to people being like, well, hey, I know this person, you should talk to them and stuff like that. One of the people I happened to talk to was an instructor for the C-17 squadron, and he got me into the full motion sim they had a few times. And I flew that thing like three or four times, so I have whatever amount of like minuscule experience in the C-17 sim. That obviously doesn't mean anything for any kind of job I'm doing, but not many people that aren't C-17 crew members get to play with those simulators. So that was definitely a lot of fun.
No, yeah, I agree. I got to do the KC-10 simulator with my dad and my mom down in California a few years ago, and those things are pretty realistic.
They are fun.
They're what the airlines use.
And, yeah, exactly.
I actually, my dad was like, hey, you think you could do air-to-air refueling? And I was like, honestly, probably not, but let's try it. And he told me, did you watch SpongeBob growing up as a kid?
Yep.
So you know the campfire song?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he told me that, because when I was doing it, I was getting frustrated because it was like, you know, the smallest move of the yoke and you'd mess it up. And he was like, you know what I tell my students when they're sitting here all stressed out just like you? And I was like, what? And he's like, I tell them to sing the campfire song, SpongeBob, and it works every single time because it gets their mind off what they're doing, and they just do what they're taught to do. And I was like,
That's funny. Yeah. I also, too, got thrown into like a, hey, you want to try refueling? And I was like, sure, if you want to see me make a jerk of myself. But so he sets me up. He actually put me behind a KC-10, and I think it was a little bit easier because the C-17 has the stick. But making the small movements, I had it for the most part, but I just could not get close enough to dock. And it was frustrating me because I was holding behind him and I could follow the movement and everything. And that was fine. And just when I really had figured it out, and I was going to make that last push of the throttle to get up into it, the tanker turned in its orbit. And I said, screw it. I'm done. He's like, you don't want to try? I said, nope, I'm not going after that. It took me forever just to stay behind him. I can't do it.
Yeah, no, it's definitely an art. I'm hoping to do the 135 sim. I'm going to visit my brother and my brother-in-law in a few months, and they were telling me they'll be able to get me in the sim, and I'm gonna do the boom sim as well. My little brother's a boom, and yeah, he loves to talk crap to me, telling me he has more hours flying than me, and I'm like, dude, what is a passenger?
Yeah, exactly.
But no, yeah, being a boom, it's a pretty cool job. I really regret not having the opportunity to go air crew because they live the life, especially as enlisted guys.
Oh, they do.
That's the life to live.
Yeah, they really do.
When he calls me complaining, I'm like, dude, you don't even get it, man. I'm security forces.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's been funny. Sometimes I actually have. Do you know the page Vectors the Final on Instagram?
I don't know that one. I don't think so.
You should check it out. He's a major here at Andrews. And the first time I met him, I was like kind of dorkingly like starstruck. I was like, he rolled down his window and he's like, hey, what's going on? And I was like, dude, your vector's to final. And he was like, oh, yeah, bro, what's up? And I was like, dude, this is super cool. And I was like, I'm a private pilot and I love your page. And he was like, you're a pilot? And I was like, yeah, I mean, fly Cessnas. He's like, well, you're a pilot just as much as I am. And he's like, bro, let's chat sometime. Run by the squadron. And I was like, all right, cool. I was like, definitely not going to walk right into your squadron and go, hey, can I talk to Major blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's funny. And now I work over in the Air Force One hangar. And one of my dad's really good buddies is one of the pilots for Air Force One. And the other day I was just standing down at the plane, you know, checking everybody's wraps coming on the plane. And he walks up to me and he's like, oh, hey, DeMarco. And I was like, oh, hey, Mr. Maddox. Cause I've known the guy for a while. And he had like three other pilots with him. And he was like, so are you going, you know, is your dad coming up soon? I was like, yeah, they're coming up in a few weeks. And he's like, you going to take them flying? And I was like, yeah, no, yeah, we're definitely going to go up and fly. And the other pilots are just kind of looking at me like, what? And he like, my dad's buddy turned around. And he's like, oh, this kid's a pilot. He's working on his commercial. And they're all just like, oh, they're like, yeah, I didn't know what you guys were talking about. And I'm like, yeah, enlisted guys can fly too.
It is funny the looks that you get sometimes. I've had a couple of like raised eyebrows and stuff because I'll have some colonel or star will walk up to me because I've had conversations with them before and we'll just chat about flying and stuff. And it's just like, who does this airman think he is talking? What does he think he's doing? And I'm just like, he asked me and we're talking about airplanes. So I don't care who you are or what's on your chest. I'm going to talk to you about airplanes.
Oh, yeah. No, yeah. When I say a pilot, I beamline it. I'm like, hey, well, you want to chat for a second? But no, yeah, it's funny. I mean, that lieutenant, the guy that flies helicopters over at Andrews, he actually gave us a tour of the plane one day. And he was like, I mean, he's brand new to the unit. So they were like, hey, lieutenant, you're doing, you know, the dirty work of, you know, go give these kids a tour. And we start chatting and he was like, you know a lot about airplanes. And I was like, oh yeah, I'm working on my commercial. And then we start talking. He was like, how many hours do you have fixed wing? And I'm like, oh, I'm right around 200. And he's like, dude, you have more than I do.
Yeah.
Really? And he's like, yeah, man. And I was like, oh. And it's funny because we went and we flew together and I think the guy has like over 250 hours in helicopters, but he kept reaching down for the side where the compensator is in the helicopter every time we're about to like, you know, like if we, have you ever like seen how a helicopter's set up?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you know, that compensator that helps him, that changes the angle of attack of the blade.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He kept reaching down for it. And I was like, dude, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, sorry, man. I keep thinking I'm in a helicopter. And it's just, it was funny watching. He was like, dude, I haven't used, you know, I haven't had to fly coordinated in a while. I'm like, yeah, don't forget about the rudder. But yeah, no, it's just, it's funny too, how, you know, like, you know, how two pilots who are in two different spectrums can just, you know, we all have that instant, like, we like click and we're just like, oh, like it's that bond that you just instantly can, you know, start chatting for hours about.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. I've had many work days feel a lot shorter because I found like another aviator within a unit or from a visiting unit. And we just wind up talking for so long.
Yeah. No. Yeah. It's definitely something that, I mean, you could chat for hours and hours over it, but we can wrap it up now. And I just have one question for you.
You mm-hmm. know,
say you have somebody, and they're asking you, you know, how they should get into aviation. Say it's, you know, a young enlisted airman at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. What would you, you know, the advice you would give him, and maybe the advice of some of the mistakes you made that you would correct?
The biggest thing that I would say, and it's kind of the cliche, like just go to your local airport and talk to someone, but like really just do your research, look online, make a phone call to a local flight school and just walk down there and ask and be like, hey, I'm interested in aviation. I don't know what I'm doing. I promise you, you'll find someone there that'll set you on the right path. And don't let don't let small things stop you from continuing on. Initial training is tough, and there are going to be many times where you're going to want to quit. If it's something that you want to do, keep doing it. And if I can do it, I'm no one special at all. I'm not a celebrity. I'm not some other. I was just another enlisted person. And I just, it's what I wanted to do. And I've had many people tell me that, oh, you're not, you can't do it, or you're not supposed to do it, or like, I don't know of a way to do it. So I, there must not be a way. Go figure it out. Go do it yourself. It's one of those things, like, you'll realize it in the end when you are the one that actually went and found the answers. It's going to be that much more satisfying, because you're not going to get the answers, every answer from everybody. You have to go find those kind of answers yourself.
Oh, yeah, that I think that's some great advice. And just to kind of highlight on that, the Air Force Cool, have you ever heard about being able to, it's $4,500 for your private pilot or your private multi add-on? Have you heard about that?
I have heard about it. I've heard about Air Force Cool, as well as just regular tuition assistance. The program is great. The tricky thing about it is less and less bases are having aero clubs. And that normally would be the first thing I would suggest, is if you're an enlisted member, if you're on base, if we're talking military, go find your base's aero club. The unfortunate thing is a lot of these aero clubs are closing. So you have to branch out into your local area and look at the local flight schools. And not all of those will take VA benefits. Some of those you may have to work and put money for. But just like anything else you invest into, it pays off in the end. And definitely do your research when you're looking at the schools. Don't go for the shiniest airplanes, or this one has a G-1000 in it while this one has steam gauges. Don't go for the shiny airplane. Like, do what you can afford, because at the end of the day, both of those flight schools push out the same kind of person. They push out the same kind of pilot. One's just going to charge you more.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, and just that Air Force Cool, I found out, and I didn't know it during my private training, but you can go anywhere with that. It just has to be a Part 61 school, which I don't know why it has to be Part 61. There may be something in the reg that says otherwise, but from what I read, it stated it had to be a Part 61. But you can take that $4,500 and go anywhere and knock your training out. So it's a hidden gem that most people don't know about that I'm trying to get out there, because $4,500 will get you places.
No, that's a good move, especially if you're in your own, because a lot of these programs that are there for enlisted, they exist and just nobody knows about them. And it takes a rock solid NCO or senior airman, for that matter, it just takes a rock solid person to do their research and spread the word on that.
Yeah, no, definitely. Yeah. And just tell as many people. So one, you know, it might not even be a pilot that knows about it, but they meet someone that wants to become a pilot and they're like, oh, hey, I know about this program.
Right. Like,
yeah. So yeah, that's definitely a hidden gem. But Dimitri, I appreciate you coming on. It was, you know, a really good time talking. Hopefully our paths will cross.
Most definitely.
We can sit down and chat in person. But again, I thank you for coming on the podcast. It was a great time, man.
Hey, right on, man. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me. And anytime you're right, Pat, the beer's on me.
Yeah, same with you, man. DC, definitely have a few brews. But I appreciate it, man. And you have a good one, all right?
All right. Thanks a lot. Take care.
Yeah, talk to you later, brother.
All right.